such as Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International, and has also been condemned by Israeli human rights organizations such as B'Tselem, the Israeli Human Rights Organization for the Occupied Palestinian Territories. It's hard to fathom the remarks of your guest that these prisoners are posing existential threats to Israel. If you take the case of the 192 administrative detainees, they are detained without charges or trial. So the first question I would want to put to your guest is, how would he know what kind of threat they pose to Israel? How can he say with such certainty that they pose an existential threat to Israel if he can't possibly know the charges against them, what they're being accused of, because this has never been made public, and there is no way that these alleged charges could have been confirmed in a trial, because the nature of administrative detention is such that there is no trial. So I'd be curious to know from your guest how he knows these things. On the question of the political dimension of the conflict.
Yes, go ahead, Mr.
It's pretty obvious from even the, on the political dimension of the conflict, it's pretty obvious if you follow the recent coverage of the Kerry Initiative that Nahum Barnea, Israel's senior political columnist, he interviewed not the Palestinian, but he interviewed the Israeli negotiators. Excuse me, he interviewed the American negotiators on what transpired in the negotiations. And it was, there was a consensus among the American negotiators, not the Palestinian. There was a consensus among the American negotiators that the burden of responsibility for the collapse of the negotiations fell squarely on Israel's shoulders. When Secretary of State Kerry testified before Congress, he said the moment when the negotiations collapsed, what he called, or what has come to be known as the POOF moment, P-O-O-F, the POOF moment, well, it was, according to the Secretary of State, it was Kerry, excuse me, it was Netanyahu, or the Israeli government, that was responsible for the collapse of those negotiations, the POOF moment. There is simply no evidence whatsoever, none whatsoever, not a jot, not a tittle, that these negotiations collapsed because the Palestinians refused to recognize Israel. In fact, that hurdle was passed in November 1988. So we're talking about 25 years ago.
Yes.
The recognition of Israel, that litmus test was passed by the Palestinians.
Well, let's allow Mr. Peterson to give his response to those questions you raised there. I'll be back with you, Mr. Finkelstein, but Mr. Peterson, go ahead.
There's been an awful lot put on the table by Mr. Finkelstein, and I should say that I wish we had a much longer program to be able to address each one of these ad seriatim. However, we are not engaged in an academic salon's debating of the fine points and creases on a pair of formal trousers. We are engaged in real life issues of survival. It is not a fantasy, it is a fact that missiles have rained down over years on the Israeli people, murdering innocents. Not sending innocents to prison without trial, but killing them intentionally and creating terror. I should say also that a response to that has a broader range of acceptability than it would if they were raining cream puffs down on Israel. Okay? This is death. This is life and death, Mr. Finkelstein. In another case, we should look at the, we have President Lincoln, a revered and highly honored, deeply honored American president, yes, at the beginning of the American Civil War, suspended the Constitution and the right of habeas corpus, sent federal troops into a sitting legislature in the state of Maryland, and arrested, put into prison, the entire sitting legislature, and that state of habeas corpus remained suspended for the entire American Civil War. Now, that would not have gone over well in Mr. Finkelstein's salons, and it did not go well over in much of America, but it was a fact. It was seen as being an essential in order to secure victory of a principle and a preservation of the Union at the time. Israel is facing a similar existential struggle, yes, and is taking measures, some reasonable, some, I quite agree, not reasonable, but they are taking measures to attempt to survive. Yes. What is needed is that there is an equivalent gesture on the other side to join together, recognize one another's existence, and work together so that people are not incarcerated, children are not killed on either side, and that people can work together for peace and prosperity in the region. We can take that debate out of the salons, put it into the streets, yeah, in practical measures, save lives, and start doing the hard work, yeah, for liberty and for human rights in the region.
But
it is not done with, yeah, with false premises that are thrown out there and fine academic points that are utterly meaningless in a real world.
Well, Mr. Finkelstein, I guess Mr. Peterson is saying we should take a more realistic approach at what's happening on the ground, and that Israel is facing an existential threat. It's a matter of survival now. Your response to that?
Well, there have been attempts, numerous attempts, to resolve the conflict. And the question, it seems to me, is if Israel has set terms for resolving the conflict, such that the Palestinians have only two options, namely to resist or to lay down and die, it shouldn't surprise if Palestinians resist. The reality, however, is the Palestinian resistance, in particular in recent years, has pretty much been reduced to zero. Not even Israel claims, contrary to what your guest alleges, not even Israel claims that they are faced with an existential threat from, for example, the West Bank. The West Bank is now being fully policed by Palestinians who are effectively doing Israel's dirty work in the West Bank. And there has been no significant, or for that matter, even insignificant threat posed from the West Bank. So this is a pure fantasy on the part of your guest or your other guest.
Yes.
Now, he says, and it's true, that there have been attacks by rudimentary missiles or projectiles on Israel. I happen to be familiar with most of the figures, so let me give you some examples and let the listeners decide the relative burden of suffering. During the Second Intifada, which began in 2000, and usually it's dated, it ended in 2007, about 6,000 Palestinians were killed, about 1,000 Israelis, overwhelmingly civilians on both sides. During the Israeli invasion of Gaza, between December 28, 2008 and January 17, 2009, about 1,400 Palestinians were killed, yeah, overwhelmingly civilians. 13 Israelis were killed. Of those 13, 3 were civilians. and 10 were Israeli soldiers. Of those 10, 6 of them were killed by Israeli soldiers in what's called friendly fire. During the Israeli war in 2006 in Lebanon, about 1,200 Lebanese were killed, 1,000 of whom were civilians. On the Israeli side, approximately 160 Israelis were killed.
Yes.
Of those 160 Israelis, 40 were civilians. So if you look across the history, and I'm just reviewing the last 15 years, if you look across the history, over just the last 15 years, the ratio has roughly been about 20 Palestinian or Lebanese, 20, let's just call it Arab, about 20 Arab civilians killed for whatever, for every one Israeli.
Well, Ms.
So to put the matter simply, if Israel is facing an existential threat, then the existential threat faced by its neighbors is about 20 times the existential threat faced by Israel.
Well, we are quickly running out of time. I'll give both of you gentlemen a minute if you can. Mr. Peterson, let's look at how the United Nations has viewed this. It's calling, for instance, the situation in Gaza collective punishment. A question that I'd just like to raise before we end the show, the Israeli-U.S. relationship. Don't you think the U.S. should be putting more pressure on Israel to stop what the U.N. is calling collective punishment? The Americans have the right to decide where their money is going to and where it's being spent for what purposes.
I think the administration is putting significant pressure. I will not raise it quite to the level of undue, but I should say very significant, unprecedented pressure on Israel to compromise some things that Israel feels are fundamental to its survival. I'm not going to engage in the exchange of conflicting casualty counts and assertions that your other guest made. We simply don't have time.
Yes.
But I should say that, yes, the United States is putting significant pressure on Israel. I hope that the United States will stand as a fair broker
but
for
Peterson,
both sides
sorry to have to stop you there. I'm really sorry.
Pressure.
Let's just allow, because we're out of time, let's just allow the last comments by Mr. Finkelstein on this. Do you think, Mr. Finkelstein, that the U.S. is putting pressure on Israel? 30 seconds, if you can.
The U.S. is not. The U.S. is putting pressure on Israel in order to agree to the Kerry plan. But the Kerry plan has nothing to do with justice for resolving the conflict. The U.S. record with regard to the Palestinians is the same as the U.S. record now with regard to Egypt. There are 20,000 Egyptians in jail now, all of whom are suffering torture.
Yes.
1,100 of them were sentenced to death. And what was the U.S. reaction to the 1,100 who were sentenced to death? The U.S. reaction was,
I'm afraid I've got to stop
we're going to start up our military aid and our civilian aid all over again.
Thank you very much. We have run out of time. Big thank you there to our guests in New York, author and lecturer, Mr. Norman Gary Finkelstein, and with us live from Washington, Congressional Policy Advisor, Mr. Frederick A. Peterson. Thank you so much, everyone, for staying with us here on The Debate.